he would borrowed for his spree. He merged his life in spirit and behaved accordingly. He dressed in ragged garments and untied his splendid hair and showed upon his face only a silent, vacant stare. Without consulting anyone, he started walking north and thought only Krishna as he aimlessly went forth. Observing what king had done to greet the Kali age, his younger brothers chose to do the same, for they could gauze that irreligious Kali would extract a heavy toll, infecting all the citizens with selfish, evil goals. The saintly sons of Pandu had encountered many trials. They always followed scriptures and did everything worthwhile. That day they took the final step that makes a life complete and fixed their minds entirely on Krishna's lotus feet. Thus purified, the sons of Pandu kept themselves absorbed in flawless meditation on their sweet beloved Lord. Lord Krishna gave all five a gift not usually attained, admission in their bodies to his personal domain. And meanwhile, wise Vidura, on a distant pilgrimage, had also left his body in the manner of a sage. Although he also fixed his mind on Krishna as he died, Vidura went to be a god and not to Krishna's side. Bereft of loving husbands, Draupadi was left alone, but she was fully trained to think of Krishna on her own. So when the time arrived for her to leave this mortal plane, by Krishna's grace she reached that place her husband had attained. The pastimes of Pandavas departing from the world compares with Krishna's pastime, for it's absolutely pure. A faithful soul who listens to it well with from start to end arouses pure devotion to Lord Krishna deep within. Chapter 10. Vishnurath confronts Kali. When Vishnurath took the throne, he firmly set his mind to follow the example of King Pandu's royal line. Directed by a saintly priest, this great devoted soul presided well and wisely as the sages had foretold. King Vishnurath married and had four sons from his wife. His guru Kripa helped him with his spiritual life. On Ganga's bank, the king performed such splendid sacrifice that gods revealed their presence to the common person's eyes. One day when Vishnurath stooped to scrutinize his lands, he saw a rock dressed as a king, a bludgeon in his hand. The Kali age personified was beating a bull and a cow. King Vishnurath punished him, for this was not allowed. As Sutta had been speaking in continuous narration, the sages sat in perfect silence, wrapped in concentration. The news of beaten cows, however, stirred the silent crowd. The Sonika, the leading sage, stood up and said aloud, "Dear Sutta, thank you very much for speaking in this way. The god of death, Lord Yamraj, has even come today to hear these talks of Krishna, for he comprehends their worth. The soul who listens also dies but takes no further birth. Your Krishna talk is honey sweet and endlessly sublime. What use it is to hear some news that simply wastes one's time. A fool cares not for Krishna's talk and spends his time instead, all day pursuing money and all nights enjoying bed. I must ask you why Vishnurath did not kill that man who bludgeoned helpless cows and bulls. It's hard to understand. Was not the scoundrel killed at once for such a dreadful sin? As this relates to Krishna, Sutta, kindly speak again." When Vishnurath took the throne, before long he could tell, the Kali age was infiltrating, raising social hell. Determined to correct the faults and set his kingdom right, he left to find and challenge Kali to a proper fight. The king went out in person to inspire his mighty forces. His chariot was lion-flagged and drawn by four black horses. His fearless soldiers marched or rode on elephants with jewels and subjugated distant lands to Vishnurath's rule. Beholding this unrivaled army, monarchs joined their palms and loudly praised the Pandavas while paying royal arms. When kings declared, "Lord Krishna saved you even in the womb," King Vishnurath's eyes lit up and he allotted boons. King Vishnurath learned how Krishna very humbly served and helped the sons of Pandu gain the kingdom they deserved. He drove Arjuna's chariot and guided Bhima's club. These pastimes of the Lord filled Vishnurath's heart with love. King Vishnurath passed his days just hearing of the glories of Krishna and Pandavas in celebrated stories. While on this journey, Vishnurath too made history. So listen well, dear sages, and you will learn of this from me. One day, a bull named Dharma, who was truth personified, approached a cow, the earth herself, who piteously cried. She looked just like the mother of a child lost or dead, upset with her condition. Dharma limped to her and said, "Dear madam, you were always healthy grazing on this hill. How has this wave of sorrow caught you? Are you feeling ill? Has something awful frightened you, discoloring your face? Has your beloved left you for a distant, dangerous place? I only have a single leg. I have lost the other three. Have you become unhappy at the very sight of me? As citizens have spurned the gods and lost their drinks and food, do they now want to eat your flesh? Has mankind grown that crude? Do fathers leave their wives and kids for selfish whims? Do so-called learned priests become the slaves of many sins? While disrespectful rulers keep them happy on the dole, has all this degradation shred the fabric of your soul? The people of this Kali age behave themselves like beasts who dine on flesh, expose themselves, and care not in the least. The great administrators of this brute society do not pick up a finger to restore propriety. Dear Mother Earth, Lord Krishna came to mitigate the pain inflicted by atrocious kings whose greed drives them insane. To simply think of Krishna's deeds assures our liberation. Do you now weep and suffer from Lord Krishna's separation? When Krishna walked your surface, all the gods in heaven sighed and felt intensely jealous of your fortune and your pride. Now time, alas, has changed your fate and you appear so weak. I wonder, do you even have the energy to speak? I will try my best to answer, said the earth personified, and she gathered her composure as she brushed her tears aside. It pains me to see you crippled, dear and noble friend. You used to have four solid legs on which I could depend. Your leg known as austerity no longer bears your weight. Your leg known as compassion has been broken out of hate. Your leg of sanitation seems to be completely gone, and truthfulness alone remains just barely hanging on. I suffer at the sight of you, but even more I cry, for Krishna has departed for the spiritual sky. With Krishna gone, the earth becomes a toy for Kali age. The might of Kali's power has reduced me to this stage. Lord Krishna is a reservoir of truth and cleanliness, and any other excellence a person can possess. Control of raging anger and the traits of being kind, self-confidence, straightforwardness and steadiness of mind, mastery of the senses and responsibility, fairness, even-mindedness and equanimity, education, faithfulness, divine austerity, influential leadership and heartfelt chivalry, triumphs over obstacles, adherence to one's duty, self-reliance, aptitude, extraordinary beauty, thoughtfulness, resourcefulness, a life of harmony, willpower, intelligence, respect and courtesy, firmness, perfect knowledge and resource to enjoy, joyfulness itself, impressive power well deployed, worthiness of being worshipped, absence of false pride, steadiness and fame. In Krishna all these traits reside. Though Krishna's very presence kept the Kali age in check, now everybody suffers Kali's horrible effects. So I despair for you and me, the gods and saintly souls, and all the decent people in Varnashram social roles. Impressing marks of thunderbolts and flags and lotus flowers, Lord Krishna's footprints graced my soil, investing me with power. The goddess Lakshmi, queen of wealth, whom all the gods entreat, departs her lotus-filled abode for Krishna's lotus feet. I once was overburdened due to atheistic kings, till Krishna smashed their armies and relieved my suffering. My dear religious Dharma, demons brought you misery, till Krishna graced the human race and Yudhi dynasty. If one has seen Lord Krishna, can one bear to be apart? His wives protested when he left, but Krishna charmed their hearts. Though Krishna sometimes left his wives, his feet could not leave me, and where he walked, my grass stood up like hairs in ecstasy. As Mother Earth and Dharma thus conversed as bull and cow, and comforted themselves as far as circumstances allowed, the mighty Vishnu Rath and his entourage arrived and rested on the nearby Saraswati riverside. The king Vishnu Rath looked and saw a shocking spectacle. A low-class man in kingly robes was bludgeoning a bull. The pure white bull, so frightened to negotiate or beg, just trembled and passed urine on his one remaining leg. Beside the bull, a lovely cow, the emblem of all good, drew back in terror as a scoundrel beat her where she stood. Distressed and weak, with teary eyes and no calf at her teat, she hankered just to find a grassy field where she could eat. King Vishnurath watched this blatant sin with shock and wonder. With bow in hand, he screamed out in a voice as loud as thunder, "Just who are you? How dare you strike this helpless bull and cow? Your dress is fine and kingly, but your actions are most foul. With Krishna and Arjuna gone, have you become so bold to beat a harmless cow as if my hands were unpatrolled? As if my lands were unpatrolled, you think you will be safe in this remote, secluded place? You rogue, I shall destroy you and protect the human race." King Vishnurath asked the bull, "And who are you, my friend? You seem to be a god who has elected to descend. At no time in the history of our ancient royal line has anybody suffered such a irreligious crime. Dear bull, you need not worry, for you are well protected now, and you may also dry your tears, O gentle mother cow. As long as I am living, I shall thoroughly subdue debauchees like this scoundrel who has been attacking you. When cows are hurt, the king shall forfeit everything of worth, his life, his reputation, and his future pious birth. Religious kings protect the weak from those who wish them ill. This wretched, violent man must be immediately killed. The Pandu kings rebuke those who ignore the scriptures' law. Unless there is an emergency or reasonable cause, the gods themselves shall feel my strength and suffer from my wrath should they abuse my subjects and pursue my evil path. The scriptures guide my kingdom and my subjects are secure. How dare this evil person break the legs of one so pure? Offenseless bull, who is this man who mutilates your frame and undermines the glories of our royal family name?" The bull looked very thankful and respectfully replied, "Your words befit the Pandu line which you exemplify. Your forefathers created such an ideal atmosphere that God himself, Lord Krishna, came to serve King Yudhishthira. Dear king, it is quite hard to see by whom we are abused. Philosophers debate this point, but they too seem confused. Some say we cause our own distress when we commit a sin, while others say that higher power rules the lives of men." So that's the words of today we'll discuss. But I'll read one more verse, which is continuity. "And some declare that nature causes random joy and grief, while others claim that action rules, rejecting all belief. And some conclude that suffering can never be explained. In light of all these points of view, what do you ascertain?" So we just read 66 verses. So have you heard carefully? If so, I have some questions. So question to the first bench. What was Queen Kunti's response after hearing the sad news of Krishna departing? Yeah, this is a question to the first bench. Okay, it's okay. As soon as she heard the news, she decided that she will pass the rest of her life just trying to serve Krishna in any possible way. Next question. What special gift? Yeah. So, let me... Verse number 49 on page 73. Okay, next question. What special gift Krishna gave to Pandavas when they died? That is the second bench. Yes, perfect. The Pandavas achieved the kingdom of God in their actual same body. Generally, this body remains here and the soul goes to the spiritual kingdom. That was a special consideration. Third question, to the third bench. What was the special aspect of Vishnurad's sacrifices. What were the special features of King Vishnurad's sacrifices, the yajnas he conducted? What was the special thing which happened, which didn't happen generally? Okay, Sagar, we want to answer. Exactly. So, his yajnas, in his yajnas, the demigods would give darshan to even common people. They were so happy. So, now to the ladies. Which devotee of Krishna had the most association with Krishna? Jai. She is a devotee of Bhumi. Yeah, that's right. So, Krishna would leave Vrindavan, Krishna would leave Mathura sometimes. Bhumi is Mother Earth. So Krishna would sometimes leave different relatives and go to meet other friends, but he would never leave Mother Earth. He would always walk on Mother. So she was the one who got the most association of Krishna, and that's why she is lamenting so much that that Krishna left her. Okay, now a general question to everyone. What are the four legs of Dharma and what are the four regulative principles which support them? Yes, Naveen Prabhu. Okay, and what are the four corresponding regulative principles we follow, which support these four dharma, legs of Dharma? Yeah. Yeah. No intoxication allows us to remain austere, and meat eating breaks the mercy principle, and gambling breaks. Yeah, wonderful. Okay. So now we will move on to the today's verse. We have half an hour. Verse number 18, chapter 17. I think there is a cha missing in the English prose. Na vayam klesha cha bijani yatasu purusha shruba purusham tam vijani mo vakya bheda vimohita. Chant. Na vayam kleshcha vijani yatashu purusha shrubha purusham tam vijani mo vakya veda vimohita. Na vayam kleshcha vijani yatashu purusha shrubha purusham tam vijani mo vakya bheda vimohitan. Na vayam klesha vijani yatashu purusha shrubha purusham tam vijani mo vakya veda vimohitan. Ladies. Na vayam klesha vijani tatashru purushashruha purusham tam vijani mo vakya veda vimohita. Na, not. Vayam, we. Klesha vijani, the root cause of sufferings. Yata, where from? Siu, it so happens. Purusha shrubha, the greatest of all human beings. Purusham, the person. Tam, that. Vijanima, no. Vakya bheda, difference of opinion. Vimohita, bewildered by. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. So, let's read the purport.
There are many theoretical philosophers in the world who put forward their own theories of cause and effect, especially about the cause of suffering and its effect on different living beings. Generally, the Sikhs are great philosophers. Aniyada, the author of Vaisheshika philosophy, Gautama, the author of logic, Patanjali, the author of mystic yoga, Kapila, the author of Sankhya philosophy, Jaimini, the author of Karma Mimamsa, and Vyasadeva, the author of
Vedanta Darshan.
No, it's
okay.
Oh, Vedanta Darshan.
Oh, okay, then I will read the rest. Although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was a direct cause of their sufferings, still, as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Puran, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins, but even those seedling sins also gradually fade away by the execution of pure devotional service. Thus, even if the devotees seize the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the suffering should have been greater. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get a statement of accusation against the direct mischief monger, but they declined to give it to the aforementioned grounds. Speculative philosophers, however, do not recognize the sanction of the Lord. They try to find out the cause of suffering in their own way, as will be described in the following verses. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, such speculators are themselves bewildered, and thus they cannot know that the ultimate cause of all causes is the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. So we have just read through from the point Arjuna was lamenting and the Pandavas retires. And then King Parikshit is put as a king, and he rules very nicely. Then he hears the rumors that the Kali age is infiltrating his kingdom from the outskirts. So he comes out of his palace and tries to curb the Kali. And he roams all around, setting the principles of dharma. And in that course, he meets Kali personified. And here Kali personified is hurting Dharma personified in the form of a bull, and Mother Earth personified as a cow. And so when King Parikshit sees that scene, he is immediately ready to punish Kali age. And he is asking just for an accusation from the Dharma in the form of a bull. That if he can just say once, he will be ready to punish the Kali age. So although he also understand, and everyone understand what's going on here, still he wants to hear from bull once so that he can punish. So from here we see that King Parikshit is so powerful that Kali age cannot influence him. Sometimes we hear such explanation that because he gave, it will be discussed later, that because he gave a place in the gold for the Kali age to reside, and then Kali age resided in his helmet, which is made of gold, and that degraded his intelligence, and then he committed offense to a rishi. But that is a nonsense explanation, because here we see that he is powerful enough to check Kali, and he's trembling seeing him. So there is no possibility that he can be affected by Kali. So that was arranged by Krishna himself. So let's discuss this verse in more detail. So here we see that Dharma personified is showing such an excellent behavior. We can learn something from Dharma personified, that he is not pointing his fingers to the person who is directly the cause of his suffering. He's simply saying that it is very difficult to ascertain who is the cause of our suffering, because there are so many opinions. So in the future verses he says, that some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible. And the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. So there are six philosophies. They were prevalent at the time, 5,000 years back. They are the philosophy given by a Kannada. Kannada means, his other name is Karna Bhaksha. Karna means atom. So he is the one who gave the Vaisheshika philosophy, which deals with the atomic nature of the universe. Then there is a Gautama who gave the Nyaya philosophy, the philosophy of logic. And there's a Kapila philosophy. He gave the Sankhya philosophy. He is not the same Kapil as Lord's incarnation, but he is an atheistic Kapil. And there is a Patanjali, the author of Mystic Yoga. He gave Ashtanga Yoga process. And there's a philosophy by Jaimini. He is the author of Karma Mimamsa. And there's a philosophy by Vyasdev who gave the Vedanta Sutra. So Sankhya means a stock of knowledge, and Vedanta Sutra means the ultimate stock of knowledge. So, except for the Vyasdev's philosophy, every other philosophy is limited in its extent, in its explanation. Atheistic Kapila. Yeah. Lord Kapila came long, long back in Satyayuga, I guess. So, this is in the Dwapar Yuga. So, this is Atheistic Kapila. So, where do we hear about six philosophies in Lord Krishna's pastime? In the Bhagavatam. So, yes, exactly. So when Lord Krishna saw that all the Vrijvasis are preparing to worship Lord Indra, he didn't like it. And because Indra was puffed up, he knew that he wanted to teach a lesson to Indra. So just he started asking his father that, "My dear father, what are you doing? Can you please explain the reason you are preparing such a nice yajna and this festival?" Then he explained that we are worshipping Indra because he is providing rains, and that's what sustained us Vaishyas who depend on cows and the fields. So then Krishna kind of touched upon these philosophies, not in a serious manner, but he was just trying to stop them to do the Indra worship. So he spoke on these ideas. He said that Indra is not responsible for providing rain because you are doing pious activities. So because by dint of your pious activities, by your good karma, the rain are bound to come. What could Indra do in that? So that is like Karma Mimamsa philosophy of Jaimini, that he says that that if you do good work, you will get good results. If you do bad work, you will get bad results. So even though there is a supreme authority or some kind of God who is allowing this karma, but he is secondary, because if you do good work, he is bound to give you good results. So that is this Jaimini philosophy of Karma Mimamsa. So that's what Krishna kind of touched, though he doesn't agree with this. He was just joking. And then Krishna also said that by the power of sun, the clouds come and they come on the land and they rain. So what is the Indra doing in this? So it's a mechanism in the nature which is working on its own. Indra has no role to play in that. So this is like our modern science. We have seminars in our department which discuss how it rains, and they try to figure out that how the turbulence in the clouds is causing the rains. So that is like Kannada or Gautama philosophy of that they explain everything in terms of atoms. That this whole universe consists of atoms, and the atoms are the cause, and their different combination is the cause of different forms and different activities and different results. So this is all atheistic philosophies. So this tendency of attributing the cause to this materialistic mechanisms is not a new one. It's an old one. Even in this philosophies we can find this. So science is just developed recently. It's just extending it further, but such ideas were there long back also. So all these philosophies are very limited. They speak truth, but the truth is very limited. It's not all encompassing. It's not ultimate truth. It's just a small truth. So the complete truth is given by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse which explains that who are the actual causes for any action in this world? What does Lord Krishna explain in Bhagavad Gita? It is explained in chapter 18. He explains there are five doers. Yes, bro. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I will put them in the formal words. So Krishna says, Adhishtan Tatha Karta. That Adhishtan is the place of action. That is this body. Tatha Karta, the doer. That is the soul. Karanam cha prithak vidha. And then various instruments. Karanam is the instrument that is senses. Cha prithak vidha, of different kinds of senses. So the three are the body, the soul, and the different senses. The senses also means the demigods, because demigods are controlling the senses. So, and then vividaischa prithak chesta, different kinds of endeavors one make, and daivam chaivatram panchamam, and the super soul. So these are the five causes of any action performed in this world. So even if you have body, but if the soul is not there, the action cannot be performed, right? And even if the body and soul are present, but the body doesn't have senses, or the demigod doesn't help the body's movement, or like I want to speak, if the demigods of tongue doesn't help me to vibrate my tongue, then I cannot speak. So even if I have body and soul, without the help of demigods, I cannot perform this action. And even if I have all three, if I do not desire to perform the action, like I do not endeavor, then also I cannot perform the action. So endeavor also need to be present. And then, even if all these four are present, and if Supreme Lord doesn't sanction it, then the thing cannot happen. Not even a leaf moves without Krishna's will. So in this way, all five are responsible for any action to be performed, to be achieved. So, and Krishna says in further next sloka that if one doesn't see all these factors, then he is not seeing properly. Nasa pashyati mudmati, nasa pashyati durmati. That one is a foolish person if he doesn't see all the five actions. So these philosophies, different philosophies, lack in seeing all the five factors simultaneously. They simply focus on one of the factor and just attribute everything to that one factor. But only the Vyasa's Vedanta philosophy is the one which is complete, which sees the sanction of the Supreme Lord in any activity, in every activity. And also, Lord Brahma, who is the creator of this universe, confirms that Govinda Madhipurusham Tamham Bhajami, that's Lord Govinda is the ultimate cause of everything. Without him, nothing can manifest. So how do we appropriately acknowledge the different proportions of these five factors in any action we do? So, actually speaking, the factors are only two, though there are five, but demigods, the body, the endeavor, they all somehow or other depend on the super soul and the soul. So these two are only players, actually speaking, because then they manifest as five, but actually there are only two. So how do we give the weightage to different actions and the credits to these two? So that's the question. So somebody can say that that I am the cause of everything. Kartaram iti mannite. That everything I am achieving, I am doing wonderful things, I am earning a lot of money, I am achieving this position. Everything is done by me. So is that correct? So clearly that is not correct. And somebody might say that I am suffering so much, I've got this disease, and so then Krishna is responsible for my suffering. That is also not correct. So this extreme is not correct. Simply taking all the credit for oneself and giving all the bad credits to Krishna is not correct. But the reverse is perfectly correct. So reverse won't be false. Simply to say that everything bad happens, whatever bad happens is due to me, and whatever good happens due to Krishna is perfectly correct. Because that's actually the truth. Because there is no amount of austerity or no amount of good work, no amount of chanting you may do which will force Krishna to come and give you the boon. There is no formula which can bound Krishna. So Krishna is totally free. So anything good happens, that is actually the mercy of Krishna. It is not because of our good work. So it's a mercy of Krishna that he mercifully gives the fruits. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that karmanya vadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala hetirbu mate sango sakti karmani, that you have right to do work, but you are not entitled to the fruits of your work. That is because the work is not leading to the fruits. The fruit is given by Krishna. Fruit is given by mercy of Krishna. It's not that because we did good work, the good fruits is coming. But if anything bad we experience is due to our own choices, that is perfectly correct. So this philosophy is correct one. And we get different evidences in the scriptures which support this idea. One evidence is, I was reading yesterday, 11th canto, Avanti Brahman. Avanti Brahman said a very interesting thing. Jivam kuchit sandashiti swadadbhis tad vedanayam katmaya kupyet. That sometimes our tongue is bitten by the teeth. So then if we feel pain, then to whom we will go to become angry with, right? So we are biting our own tongue. So whatever bad happens is our own wrongdoing coming back to us. So to whom would we become angry? We might see a different instruments acting to give that bad result to us, but actually it's our own wrongdoing. And Avanti, if you read that whole chapter, he systematically removes all other causes and he establishes that he himself is the cause of his own suffering. That's a very nice chapter, chapter number 23 in the 11th canto. And another incidence we see in Bhagavatam where there are many incidences, even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains. In the Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma is explaining that tattvenu kampam sushmik shamanu bhunjan evatmukate vipakam hridavag vipurvi vidhan namaste jivetiyo mukti spade sadaya bhag. That if one, during undergoing his suffering, if one is able to fold his hands and from his heart, from his mind, from his words, from his body, he is able to thank Lord and say to him that, oh my Lord, whatever happening to me is because of my own misdeeds. Such a person is eligible for liberation. So liberation, achieving liberation seems very easy, that if there is misery, we can simply accept our faults and simply say to Lord that it's my fault, I totally understand, I do not blame you. In the modern society, we are trained to blame others. Women blame men blame women, children blame their parents blame the children for the suffering. But that's a training we get, but that's not the correct thing. Because to accept the responsibility of our own wrongdoing is a great thing. It's not an easy thing. It's easier said than done. When we are suffering, when we are undergoing misery, that time, if we can really sincerely feel that whatever is happening to me is because of my own misdeeds, that's a great achievement. So that's why he's eligible for liberation, for able to say that. Whenever I have some problem, I try to imagine and meditate on this verse, and it's very difficult to accept that it's because of my own. I mean, it's so much trouble that it pains so much to accept that. So we always tend to blame others, that this is the reason, that is the reason. But this is the right action to do. So devotees do not blame others. Whenever they see any cause of misery, they simply accept their fault. And there are many examples in the Bhagavatam for that. One example is King Parikshit himself, as we will read, that when he was cursed by the son of Sringi, or the Sringi himself, then he did not blame him, or he did not try to protect himself. He simply accepted it as the something done by the Lord, and he took that opportunity to advance further in life. So that's exemplary behavior. That's what we learn from Dharma also, that he is not blaming the immediate cause of his suffering. He is accepting it as something, his own mistake. So these are the, and we see also Maharaj Chitraketu, when he was passing by, he was a liberated soul, he was passing by and he saw a Lord Shiva explaining about renunciation to some sages, having Mother Parvati sitting on his lap. So seeing that scene, he smiled. And his smile meant that, oh, only Lord Shiva can do this. No other person can do that. This is, I mean, having a wife with you and then speaking about renunciation is such a irony. So then, and sages were also listening. So then when he smiled, Mother Parvati saw that and she felt that he's insulting her husband. And she immediately cursed him that he will become a demon. And he folded his hands and he accepted the curse. So, and then Shiva, Lord Shiva says that Narayana para sarve na putashana bibhyati swarga pibarga narkeshu apitulyat darshanam. That devotees of Lord Narayana are so great that they do not care of any circumstances, be it a heavenly planet, be it the hellish planets, or be it even the liberation. They simply care for serving Supreme Lord. So here also we see the Chitraketu did not try to explain his situation. He simply accepted everything done to him as a mercy of Lord. So this cannot be done artificially. One has to have great faith in the Lord. Unless one understands that Lord Krishna controls every moment in one's life, then one cannot do this. If we have doubts, then we will try to find other causes of some wrongdoing happening to us. But if we have full faith on Lord Krishna, then only we can exhibit such behavior. So although we are all struggling, we are all diseased, I am the greatest one, I guess, in the diseased one, but still, we should keep these ideals in front of us so that we can aspire for them. And we can, whenever some wrong thing happens, we can meditate on this and try to see how, where we are falling short. And we can try to walk on the spiritual path with this attitude. There was once incident that some devotees were complaining to Srila Prabhupada that this devotee did that, that devotee did that. So then Prabhupada said, who is the devotee here? Then only I am the devotee here. You guys are not devotees. So he just ridiculed them that don't think that you are devotees. You are trying to be devotees. Only I am the pure devotee here. So he gave them this chastisement that, so what he's trying to teach us that, that we are all diseased. We are all trying to be devotees. And so, sometimes we are attached to our position. Sometimes we are attached to our glories. So we see other devotees as threats. So all these are because of our disease condition. But we should try to overcome that and try to, not blame others and, try to see everything as done by Lord. So by the faith of a devotee, Lord actually takes care of a devotee. If we do not have faith, then we are undergoing suffering due to our own karma. But when we have faith, the Lord actually takes care of a devotee's life. And he, whatever happens is actually done by the Lord. It's not an artificial adjustment a devotee makes. He does some kind of thinking he has to imagine and so feel peaceful. It's actually done by the Lord when one has faith. Yeah, so that's all I have to share. Yeah, I mean, for a common people, they are suffering because of their own karma. But a devotee might also suffer because of his own karma. But when he has faith in Lord, then actually everything is arranged by Lord in his life.
So how do they
do something
around responsibility for suffering? Is
that
artificial? Or
like, no, it is. If we try to accept it, it's truth. It's a truth. That whatever suffering is happening is actually reduced by Lord for a devotee. So Lord actually interferes in a devotee's life based on his faith. So that's what I'm saying. For a pure devotee, it's all everything arranged by Lord. But for us, it's our karma reduced by Lord and given us as a token. It's not an artificially adjustment in our thinking that makes us feel good. It is actually a fact. Yes, Prabhu. No. The blaming has to be there. I mean, who is to be blamed? I am to be blamed. And that is good because that gives us an impetus to improve. If we keep blaming others, we will not improve. We will not change. We will not progress. But if we blame us, then we'll improve ourselves. We'll become better. So there is example of Srivas Thakur. When Srivas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would perform this whole night kirtan, they would not allow anybody to enter that because one has to be pure to see that kirtan in the Srivas Thakur's Angan. So he would lock his house. So other smart Brahmana would be desirous to see what's going on inside. They were envious and they were jealous. So they were not given entrance into the Angan. So one of them, out of envy, put some paraphernalia of goddess Kali's worship in front of Shiva's Angan. And next morning he just told everyone that, see, this is what these guys do. They worship Kali, they have sex, they have tantras in their, you know, whole night. So Srivas Thakur didn't try to protest himself. He said, yes, I'm very fallen. I does these things. But the other villagers simply didn't believe that Brahmana because they knew the character of Srivas Thakur. And because of his wrongdoing, he incurred leprosy later in his life. And then he was forgiven later because he asked forgiveness. But that's what we can see that, but we cannot practice it artificially, I also understand that. But we should keep these ideals in our mind, that's the ideal.
The manager here, all day, listening to people coming saying, this person's doing this, this person's doing this, this person's doing this. And I think of this verse because we're so stubborn that this other person is causing my problem. And we don't realize that when we are in that consciousness, even if they're wrong, whatever karma they're getting for hurting us, we get that equally. Because we're blaming them. Just like a dance. And people die in that consciousness. Oh, my life was ruined by this person. And as a result,
They're thinking of that person, they just take the next birth with that person and continue. You know, it's not for the other person that we give up this animosity, right? That's why it's so futile to blame somebody.
Yeah.
It's for our own good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that famous statement that you made, I'm suffering due to my own past misdeeds, and due to the Lord, I'm only suffering a token reaction, I'm not blaming the other person. There's also another side of that, this person is acting helplessly under the control of the three modes of material nature, and the control of God is not his fault. So that's another aspect of that also. He's acting helplessly under the influence of the three modes of material nature and the control of God. It's not his fault. That's why you can't blame somebody else, because they're helpless.
Thank you very much for your wonderful lecture. I'm just wondering why certain people have faith that even though they suffer, they can accept that's not due to someone else, but it's because of themselves or because of some sort of Krishna's arrangement. Why do certain people have such faith? And why do other people not share such a faith and then because some people see the suffering and then say that's exactly why God does not exist?
I know one answer, but I will depend on Kalakan Prabhu to correct me. Humility is the reason, one prime quality which makes one be able to have that consciousness. When one thinks that one is great, then one cannot accept that one's own wrongdoing can bring him pain. So that's one reason.
That's very nice, and I would add to that, we haven't suffered enough yet. When we realize how blaming somebody else just makes us miserable, and we finally get tired of being miserable, sitting around blaming everybody for our problems, then we give it up. Mm. So that is humility, like you said. I deserve much worse. Mm. By Krishna's grace, I'm getting just a little.
What's the difference between blame and, I don't know if justice is the right word, but...
Justice, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Because I was trying to think of what actually breaks the cycle of karma when one person realizes...
There are two things. One is the inner consciousness of a person, and one is the external action he takes out of duty. So sometimes we are in a position that we need to make a distinction and find out the immediate causes of action and correct them. But internally, we can always think that whatever experiences I am undergoing is because of my own wrongdoing. Like, some time back, many times we have friction among devotees, and then we can identify externally that this led to that, that led to this. This is the external chain of action-reaction. But internally, we should always remember that this experience I'm undergoing is because of my own past wrongdoing. But it is manifesting externally. So we should do something to correct that external set of actions. But always know within our heart that whatever is happening is because of my own wrongdoing. So there are two things. Like Radhana Maharaj explains that he is a guru, but internally he maintains that he is a servant of everyone. So that clicked to me so there are two things. One can play as a great leader and chastise his dependents, but internally he can still maintain a service attitude. So there are two different things. How we act depending on our current situation. We are in a temple management or something, we have to correct situations and we have to improve people. But internally we can still maintain that humility can be maintained. So it's a state of inner self. So that's what I would say, Prabhu. Yeah, justice is important. It should be done. But I was just distinguishing that both can coexist together. There is no conflict. So we can do justice for sake of correcting the situation, but internally we can still maintain that nothing happens without Lord's sanction. So I'm experiencing something is because of my own wrongdoing. So
we shouldn't blame others, but we should cite others' wrongdoings?
But only one who is in position.
The bull could safely do this because there was justice behind him, you see. It's harder in Kali Yuga when the justice is not so readily available. The bull very confidently said, I'm not going to blame this person, even though it was very clear who was doing it to him, because he knew that Parikshit Maharaj would understand and would act properly. But we don't always have that. Jita and I have some experiences in our lives where we're certain there's a great injustice being done against us, and we thought, oh, the government will take care of this, the courts will take care of it, and we were quite disappointed. So it was easier for the bull. That was my point.
Sagar Prabhu has a question.
Thank you for a nice lecture, Pujian. And this last question it always tickles our mind. It's like, so what is that thin line between like blaming and between like, you know, just taking the poison inside and like, and feeling miserable, like not blaming externally, but still when you see that person, you are like, ah, oh, he did that to me actually, like internally. So like, how do we like throw the poison out also, but not blame?
Okay, so my version of answer is that one should act according to his realization. And before doing any action, one should seek guidance of senior devotees. Because in anger, we are always wrong, mostly. So we should always seek a senior person and vent out to him. He can act as the absorber.
Kingdom, like, a king would have his own justice for the whole kingdom, and then there is a justice of God, which is karma. And sometimes Prabhupada says that if someone, say, murders someone, then he should be killed according to justice, so that he doesn't incur more karma in his next life. So justice of God is like more intricate, and like it will cause more problems to the person than the justice done by the government.
Okay, see? Ideally, the government should act in such a way that it is acting on behalf of God, and whatever justice government does is the justice of God. That is the ideal situation. So king behaves on behalf of God. So whatever punishment he gives is according to scriptures, and they are the punishment of God. That's it. That's the end. But if he doesn't, then he suffers of not being able to give proper justice, and then that person will also suffer whatever remaining punishment he deserves. So let's end here. Thank you very much.